Welcome to How'd We Get Here, a podcast on education and design with wellness in mind. I'm Mark Anthony, and on today's episode, we'll speak to Bianca DiPietro, professor in graphic design, as we discuss design confidence and the role educators play in building design confidence with their students. Hey, Bianca, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. How's your summer going?
Oh, it's very hot. Very sweaty. But good. Getting used to being on vacation is hard after a very hectic year at school. So yeah, just easing into it at this point.
What are you doing to stay cool?
I have a kiddie pool that I put my feet in because I don't have a regular size pool. Eating lots of freezies.
Oh yeah. What's your favorite color?
I love freezies.
I should say flavor, but I go by color.
What was that?
I said, what's your favorite flavor of
freezy?
Oh,
flavor. I don't know the flavors, but I like the white one and the blue one.
Yeah, same. That's what I was saying earlier. I don't really go by flavor by freezy. I go by color, and it's usually the white one that I like. The white one's the best. Is it the jumbo ones you got?
What was that?
Is it the jumbo ones that you got?
Oh, no. I got the small ones, but like I'll eat like probably like four or five at a time. It's so bad. Yeah, it's toasty over here sometimes.
Okay, cool. First, I just want to thank you for speaking with me today about design confidence. And I feel like this is an important subject to touch on, as I've seen how confidence has affected my own personal sort of story and journey throughout my academic and professional career. And I'm certain that other designers and students have their own experiences and struggles with confidence, not only in themselves, but also in their work. But before we get started, do you want to maybe tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I am currently a designer, educator, and I am the full-time professor and program coordinator at Humber College in Toronto, Canada. I have been at Humber now for 5 years, and in education for about 5.5, 6 years. Before I was at Humber, I taught in the YSDM program at Sheridan College. And then before that, I've been a designer in many capacities. I started in print, doing magazines, and then I got into web as web started to take off. I took night courses early on in my career and learned web, and then started doing like front-end development, WordPress, still designing. And then I magically got into education because I have a master's, and I did a master's directly after I finished my undergrad. And decided that was a good time to do master's and didn't really have any intention of teaching. And I also didn't really know that it was a requirement to teach at the college level. So it was kind of just serendipitous that I ended up in education because I had a master's. So a former professor of mine reached out to me from Sheridan and asked me to teach a course. And then that kind of sent me along my new journey of working and educating and securing my full-time position at Humber. Yeah. I guess like my interests in education right now is kind of exploring the idea of finding personal impact and really uncovering meaningful work as a designer. I find that's a very kind of passionate topic of mine, because I feel like design is so powerful. And when you do the right type of design, it can really transform your career. And just kind of on that note too, kind of bringing happiness and fulfillment into the classroom. So as a faculty and a teacher, I want to kind of combine all these things and really kind of communicate to my students that, you know, as a designer, and in this space that's constantly growing and changing, you have the opportunity to really make a difference for others, but also kind of fulfilling that personal satisfaction when you're doing it as well.
Good. That's really interesting stuff. Like when you say things like meaningful work, like Are you talking about giving yourself purpose in your design, or like what does that actually entail for those who maybe don't understand what it is to design something that's a bit more meaningful or purposeful to them?
So meaningful work to me means sort of combining your values with what you're doing as a designer. So I feel like they don't teach this in school enough, and maybe some students have explored this on their own, but really knowing what you stand for as a person, and what you value in your life. This can be a long list of values, and you know, you have your top five or top 10, but really understanding what means the most to you as a designer, and then how that can influence your work seems very unrelated, but when you actually boil it down to what your values are, your work can really start to align to your values. And then I feel like that gives you that sense of personal impact. Like your work is now aligning with who you are. You are getting your own personal satisfaction because your values align with your work. And then hopefully that work therefore is better understood and better executed, and therefore the user or the client or the person on the other end is also getting more out of the work because it's so meaningful to you. So I feel like there's like multiple points of like benefit, I guess, in this scenario of like really aligning all of those things in your life. So you know, your job is, it's a job, but like, if you align it more with your, like your values and what you stand for, I feel like those things can start to really merge together and just create a better work-life balance.
Yeah. So, I mean, two things from that, like one thing, your students may have to have those set beliefs when they come into your classroom or purposes. And then they also have to have opportunities to actually create something that's meaningful to them in the classroom too, right? So if you're doing things like more authentic based projects or giving them opportunities to create something that is more meaningful to them, then you may start to see those values come out more.
Yeah, I always encourage you know, students to explore passions in design. Like, you know, somebody really loves or is into gaming, you know, how can gaming and design, I mean, those are two very relatable things, but I mean, any sort of aspect of your life or interest or hobby or anything that, you know, you lose time to, like, you know, you, when you sit down and you're so enthralled in something and then, you know, 2 hours pass, you know, that's something truly love. Like time is it doesn't even matter. You're just, you know, enthralled.
We call that sort of like a state of flow, right? When you get into a state of flow and you're just into whatever you're doing. Some people might call it in the zone for like something that's really simplified, but when you're in the flow of doing things that you're just naturally good at, the time does go by. And I think all that ties into confidence. If a student has their beliefs, then it also means they're more confident in the work that they produce because it's a lived experience and it belongs to them. It's not just a project that is given to them because it has purpose for someone else, but it's giving them onus and ownership over their own sort of path.
Absolutely. Confidence. When you're pursuing something that is really part of who you are, there's definitely a different level of, you know, effort, concentration, focus, all of those things I feel like are, you know, really increased overall. You know, in education, it's really important to be challenged too. Like you do need to work outside of those comfort zones of, you know, you really love this particular topic or theme or industry or whatever it may be. It's important to be challenged too, but I feel like exploring your passions and really seeing where that can take you can, I think, just kind of focus on what you're good at, like focus on what you love. When people do what they love, they succeed the most, right? So I think that's really important.
Yeah, I agree. So how did you actually get started in design? Like, what influenced you to choose design as your career path?
Oh, gosh. it's kind of, I was raised as a very creative person. So I come from a very creative family. My mother is a architectural illustrator. She always did arts and crafts, painted. She's a gardener. She just, everything visual was her thing. There's just no other way to put it. She does everything that is crafty and visual. So as I growing up as a kid, I was always doing crafts. I was always using my hands. I was always painting. I was always building. I was always doing something creative. So I think that creative bones in my body were kind of like nurtured in a way. I find myself to be, I'm a creative person, but I also like logic and I like organization, and messiness can sometimes actually throw me off. So I'm like, sometimes I feel like I'm just like a very organized designer. I don't know. But like, there's parts of me when I was growing up that I was like, I really like math. Maybe I'll be a mathematician, which seems crazy because I'm a designer now. But there were points where I doubted being a designer. I was one of those students who graduated out of high school and I was like, okay, I'm just going to apply to like everything that interests me. So, you know, that was like, you know, science at McMaster and like, I don't know, interior design at Ryerson and, you know, graphic design, and there's a couple others. And it was just like these very random interests I had. But something boiled down to, once I got accepted to, I actually took the YSDN York Sheridan program, the 4-year bachelor's degree. And when I got accepted into that, it was a pretty prestigious program. So it kind of just like made sense. I was like, oh yeah, that's the one I'm choosing. I didn't know I'd get in. I got in. So it was almost like, oh yeah, you're doing that. And then when I graduated, it was a recession, and I always joke with people and say, if I could be, I'd be a professional student, because if I could learn everything and do that as a profession, I would. And ironically, I'm a teacher, so I haven't left education really. So
no, I know what you mean. I said that same thing to my friends.
So I don't know. It's kind of like, I knew design was my thing, but I still wasn't 100% convinced. And then I just took the road that felt the rightest at the time. And then here I am now. So I don't know if it's like, part of me felt like it was meant to be, but there was still that, you know, 5% of me that was like, what if something else?
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
No, it's not weird. I know exactly what you mean, because I also said that same thing when I was much younger. I would always say, like, if I could stay in school for the rest of my life, I would, because there was so many things that I just wanted to learn. But at this point, like, I know that I also still continue to learn, and I enjoy learning new things, just because there's so many interests that I have that I always just want to fulfill them. So, I mean, I was going to ask you like where you went to school, but, you know, now that I know you went to the York Sheridan program, how did your education influence your confidence as a designer?
Good question. So my education, so the YSDN program, again, was like a pretty prestigious program in design. You got a degree, you got the combination of college and university. So I'd go to my studio courses with 20 students, and then I'd go to a psychology lecture with like 300 people. So there was, I always loved that aspect of doing a joint program between a college and a university, as you kind of got both worlds and got to experience it. Being in that program made me step up my game. So I always felt And this, I think this was just programmed in me and who I am as a person. I always just felt like I had to work extra hard all the time to achieve what I achieved. It didn't always come super easy or naturally, meaning like I know I'm a creative person naturally, but to create good design work, I need to work friggin' hard. So when I was in that program, there's a lot of competition. And because it was such a rigorous selection process for the students that got in, I always felt like, oh my God, I lucked out. I lucked out. I got in. I had high marks. So I always assumed my high marks got me in and my portfolio was the weaker component. So I always worked my butt off in that program. So, you know, I never missed a class. I would be like, you know, have a fever and go to class. Don't say that now, but like I would go to class all the time. I, you know, worked really hard. And I think working hard, sort of having that feeling of, I don't want to say competition, but like it is competition. Like I was always like, oh, what are people going to bring to class? I have to, you know, do my best job each week, you know, producing what I produce to come to class, to be able to feel like I was validated to be there. And that might sound bad, but I think it made me build my confidence because I was constantly after something and it made me work harder and it made me, you know, not slack off. And it over time, it built confidence in me to realize that, you know, I am a good designer. I do have good ideas. You know, I can get up and I can present my work and I can talk about what I did. And I think that's that kind of that, what do I want to call it? It's like a healthy form of a little bit of competition or maybe inferiority, or, you know, maybe I felt a little bit like I lucked out. So I was working that like extra bit. Actually, I feel like over time that can help build the confidence that you need that you might not initially have, but you work hard to get to it. Yeah, over time. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it was kind of like a growth process, essentially. My whole life, I've always just had this in everything I do. I've always had this like, you have to work extra hard to get there. That's it. That's all done deal. And maybe that just applies to everything, but I felt like in this program, because like I knew there was students from different countries, and I know that's, you know, very common in every program, but I felt like it was the selection, like the best of the best were there. And I needed to build myself up to be the person that I wanted to be. And it took a lot of work and the confidence built over time. I did not have it day one. And it's not that like I was beaten down every week, like, oh, your work is terrible. Do better. And that wasn't a thing. I just, in my head mentally, I convinced myself I needed to work that hard. And you know, it's all a mental game. I probably didn't even, you know, like I could have probably slacked off more, but I didn't. And that's okay because it built me to who I am today.
Yeah. So like it could be a little bit of imposter syndrome, like there's the best of the best. I know that my portfolio isn't the weakest, but my grades got me in here. So I need to prove to myself or others that I belong. But within that, you sort of like worked hard enough to prove to yourself that you belong there. And that in itself is what built your confidence.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself.
It wasn't so much that, you know, you did use them as competition, but I think what I tell students that you're not in competition with anyone else but yourself. So if the things that you tell yourself are the things that you believe, so if you believe that you weren't in there because of your portfolio and you were in there because of grades, and you believe that you needed to work harder at your portfolio, because at the end of the day, that's what people are showing. But if you weren't confident in your portfolio to show your skills, once you created something that was at par with everyone else, or maybe sometimes above, now you felt validated. And now you feel like, okay, I do belong here, but not because other people affirmed me being there. I'm affirming that to myself that I belong here, because look at what I just made. Like my idea came to life. And yes, you had to work hard to do it, whereas other people just go off of talent or just like intuition. A lot of things are just, you know, intuitive for people to do, but some of us have to work at it. But I think it does build that confidence and resilience in knowing that, you know, you had to take another path. Yes, it might have seemed harder because you're comparing yourself to other people in their process. But at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter as long as you both finish the race, you know? So if you could actually see, I created something at this level that quote unquote competes with these others who I feel got in on their portfolio and who I might feel are better than me, then that makes me believe in myself more and encourages me to do better work. So the next time I try and do better than the last.
No, 100%. That's a great way of summarizing exactly what was like going on in my head. Mm-hmm. To reference the idea of like confidence and where that comes from. And, you know, sometimes it's a total mental game with yourself, essentially, right?
Yeah. And that's what I was going to, I mean, again, that's my next question too, is like, that is sort of how I develop my own confidence. And it's not really on purpose. It was just sort of an awareness that I don't have to be like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe my way of thinking is different. My process is different. My time span of accomplishing something is different. Maybe I could do things quicker than others. Maybe it takes me longer to do something that others can do, you know, way faster than me. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that I am not able to do it. It just my process is different, or the time I need might be extended or longer.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think that's how I built my own confidence in believing that I can do something. So I think confidence as a whole, you know, it's more like a belief system. Fear to me seems like something else, like the fear that I can't do something. So therefore I just don't do it or don't try it. But confidence at least gives me the belief that I'm able to do it. Mm-hmm. But between that, you have to do some form of work, right? If you do have to take longer at something or work harder at something and put in more hours than the next person, so be it. But I think what really matters at the end of the day is to show yourself that you can accomplish whatever you set out to do. So, I mean, that's sort of like, where do you think confidence ultimately comes from? Because I think like confidence is in everyone. I just think it needs to be nourished, right? And I think as an educator, we have the ability to encourage and persuade others to believe in themselves. So like, where do you think confidence ultimately comes from?
I think there's a lot of factors. So I think it comes from within, because like you're saying, you have to believe in it. And then people just have different levels of I don't want to use the word confidence, but they have different levels of like self-worth, which I think is related to confidence and how good they are and things like that. But it's, you know, inside that you believe it and feel it and are convinced of it, but external factors, are very important. So being, you know, encouraged by, you know, fellow designers around you and faculty and, you know, colleagues and, you know, people who can, you know, give you positive reinforcement, and, you know, feedback in ways that help you grow and convince you that, yes, you are good at what you do. Maybe there's improvement, but gosh, there's always improvement in everything. That can really help build confidence. I also feel like sometimes this kind of relates back to what we were talking about earlier about the imposter syndrome and, you know, inferiority and all these different things, is like sometimes you just need to force it. So there's been times in my career and in my educational career as well, where I've felt like I've looked at, you know, what other people have done, or I've compared myself to others and I've been like, crap, I do not feel good about anything I've done, but I have to just pretend and back up my work and kind of fake it in a way. And you know what's that? I feel like, as terrible as it sounds, sometimes confidence, you know, like kind of faking it and making yourself feel confident can actually help you be more confident. Like, I don't, it sounds crazy, but I feel like you have to practice and you have to convince yourself, and you're not always going to feel 100%, but you know, that's life. You know, sometimes your work, it just doesn't go as planned, and you know, you still worked hard on it, but it didn't end up materializing into something that you envisioned, and it's still valid work. And sometimes you just got to put on that confidence that you may not 100% have. And I think that practice can really help sort of build like really authentic confidence as well.
So like you mentioned that, you know, there could be someone in your sort of life or your journey, like a teacher or someone who gives you feedback, maybe a peer. Did you have a teacher or a coworker or maybe art director that helped you build your confidence or maybe affected your confidence?
Okay, so great question. Yes, I've had both positive and negative people in my life who have helped me raise my confidence and then also done the opposite. So, you know, my mother's always been a constant inspiration to me as a creative person who nurtured me from very little to be a creative person who, you know, was willing to make mistakes and try again. And then, you know, I had a variety of teachers along the way, a high school art teacher who made an impact, always really, really nurtured my creativity and like always encouraged me to always do better, but in such a positive way that it was like, your work is wonderful, you have such creative spirit, but there's always room for more exploration. Like it's that perfect, she had that perfect balance of like, so like validating what I was doing, but also encouraging me to go so much further. And, you know, I've had a whole variety of profs in my college and university career that have also done the same thing and left different levels of impact on me. I've had very outspoken faculty who have challenged me in positive ways, and then very kind of quiet faculty who have given me such rigor in my work and have done such great things to kind of guide me and build my skills. But then there's been like really negative things that have happened that kind of have taught me. I don't know. It's hard to like explain. Like they're unfortunate things that happen, and people who kind of come in and stomp on all of your confidence and you feel like you have nothing left. But I think that's taught me that, like, you know, like those are things that, I hate to say it, but they're going to happen sometimes. There's not always the best people who are you're going to be working with, or, you know, who you run into along the way in your career or in, you know, in your studies. And those people can really make you question your skills and what you know and how what your work is. But I think what, because of my, how I kind of twist things, and as soon as I feel like I am not, I'm not meant to be there, I just automatically work harder. So that is my, that is my reaction to that type of situation is like, oh, like somebody thinks I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not good enough. I'm just going to work harder. So, and then that, like you were saying earlier, internally that I work harder, I achieve something better, I prove that person wrong, I'm confident again. So that's the sort of the process that I go through, like mentally. So yeah, that person, you know, stomps on my confidence and makes me feel crappy for a little while. And then, you know, I unpackage that a little bit, realize maybe there's something else I can explore and do and be better at. And then I work harder and then I achieve it. And then I build my confidence back up. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that those things happen, but I think because they happen, we, you know, being better equipped to sort of manage the situation and then kind of manage it internally and not let it squash you and hurt you too much is an important skill to have. You know, design is not always about, and it should be always positive reinforcement, but sometimes like things, you know, you run into people where it's not going to be all the best of things happening. So you need to build your confidence and resilience to be able to sort of bounce back from situations where, you know, you don't have somebody who's mentoring you in a sort of in a very positive way. Yeah. So I think I have both scenarios. And, you know, I've had somebody tell me that, you know, because I'm a woman and because I'm wasn't 30 years old yet, nobody take me seriously. So stop trying so hard because, hey, it's not going to work anyways. Those are things I can't change until, well, I can't change that I'm, you know, a woman and I was under 30 at the time. And, you know, I had to wait till I was 30 for somebody to take me seriously. Those things I can't change, but I also, as much as that's wrong, and you know, that person shouldn't say those things to me. If you are in an environment that you have confidence and you're always building your confidence, and sometimes, yeah, you maybe don't have that much confidence. If you build that over time, I feel like you become resilient and stronger for maybe more negative situations that may happen. So in that circumstance, you know, that was like hurtful and that person said that to me. And I was like, you know what? I'm better than that. I have the confidence. I know I work hard. I validated myself. It's crappy that you said that to me, but I know deep down that I'm a validated person and I have confidence and I can move past this.
Well, that's good that you can actually, you know, you can find that confidence in yourself to overcome those things. Cause I mean, I share those same sort of experiences too. You know, even when I was beginning, it was either I was too young, I didn't have enough experience, I didn't have enough schooling. And it just always felt like another hurdle was thrown at me to tell me like I wasn't good enough. And you're right, like some things you can change, others you can't, especially like the way you were born. You cannot change that. And unfortunately, sometimes those things do stick with people. Sometimes we do brush them off and we say that they don't bother us, but it does affect us internally and probably mentally. Mm-hmm. You do have to be strong in a sense to overcome them, to keep going, because some people actually stop what they're doing because of those things that people tell them or their perspective on them or their beliefs about them. It does take a certain strength and boldness and belief in yourself to keep pushing through those situations, right?
Yeah, like I, in no way am I saying we brush off those people, but I think what I'm saying is if you're in an environment where, you know, a good majority of it is building your confidence, you're better. You have a stronger, more resilient response to somebody who's trying to squash you, basically. So confidence, you know, if we are as educators, in our classroom, trying to build our students' confidence. So when they go out into the industry and they, and by no means we want them to encounter these types of situations, but maybe they have an opportunity to, you know, say something back that's appropriate, and then also not let it totally squash them, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you said, that happens and that sticks with them. I mean, it stuck with me. I still remember who said it, when they said it, you know, where they said it. You know, all those details I remember because, yeah, it wasn't just like, oh, that person, what does he know? Right. So it definitely makes an impact. I've just grown to talk about it, know how I deal with it. And I know that my confidence now as an adult has been built up so positively by so many great people that I was able to move past it. Yes, in a way, but in a healthy way, I think.
Yeah. And when I say brush off, I don't mean like you actually just dismiss it. But what I mean is sometimes we compartmentalize those things, right? That's what I sort of mean by when you dismiss it, you still keep it somewhere in a lockbox in the back of your mind. And sometimes it creeps out. But it does take some sort of confidence for you to believe in yourself and like move forward, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, like you mentioned, you know, as us as educators, I wonder if now that we have the influence of either being the givers or builders of confidence in our classroom or the takers or destroyers of confidence, what role do you play as an educator or designer to promote confidence in your students or your coworkers?
Gosh, we play an important role. What that role is, is like I've said already, it's like positive reinforcement for students. It's an environment. So in my classroom, I always try to foster a inclusive environment that is always about positive feedback and growing people's skills and their personalities and their authentic selves in the classroom. And oftentimes what I try to do is with confidence, because it's like an internal, we kind of agree it's this internal thing you need to believe yourself, is like getting the students to really talk about their work and, you know, encourage their classmates and talk about their classmates' work and understand, you know, that feedback and criticism and growth, they have to happen, but they can happen in an encouraging environment. You know, like I said, it's, you know, your work, because it needs improvement, doesn't mean it's bad. And oftentimes students, they don't even want to hear or have or give any sort of feedback because they feel like that's a bad thing. So I think fostering an environment where you start to understand how to give that sort of positive feedback is really important, in the classroom. As well as just like, I don't know, yeah, crafting that, I guess, that environment that where students feel comfortable, you know, it's a safe space for them to talk about their work. And that work can be, you know, a week of, you know what, this didn't really go as planned, but I learned this, this, and this. And that was the sort of the positive thing that happened through these series of what may be considered failures, but failures are, you know, learning opportunities, and also communicating that to students, right? Like I say to students all the time, you're going to fail, and fail is a hard word. It's like, well, I failed. Like, you know, if you fail a class, you have to redo it again. Like it's a bad word in, especially in education. So to fail is, you know, it's just a negative thing. So, but failing can actually cause you to learn the most. Like, you know, I learned this and this and this by failing this time. And now, you know, I'm the next round of whatever you do or whatever the process is and you're in what you're doing is like, oh, well, because I failed and I learned that, that, and that, wow, I stumbled upon this. The project came out, you know, so good. I'm so proud of it, blah, blah, blah. So kind of all these factors in the classroom, but like, I think it's at the end of the day, it's about building that space. I guess it's a safe space of inclusive, you know, open to failure, fostering like positive reinforcement. It's always about not squashing somebody's confidence, but pointing out what's positive, where somebody can grow, where somebody can improve, getting all the students to talk, getting them comfortable about talking, where they are in the process of design, can all contribute to, yeah, building that confidence, that like little bud that starts to grow and then grows and grows and grows over time. That I think that's where we come in as educators, is like really crafting that scenario in the classroom.
There's a whole bunch of things that we've already spoken about that I think builds confidence in our classroom or in students as a whole or as designers. Like, process, I believe, is one. Like, getting your students to be confident in their process is good, because process is a big part of developing a system for approaching their design and thinking through their ideas. And like you said, getting feedback, critique, and getting engaged with the process of understanding concepts in order to begin creating. And then the more you understand something, the more confident you'll be in actually building something, right? And also like self-fulfillment. So like you said, you give students authentic-based projects. So knowing that projects and work that they're doing has a purpose or match their own purpose can also give them confidence. And also things like, you know, just inspiring students to use their ideas and perspectives and voices to their advantage, right? Because like you said, you want them to be their 100% authentic selves, and creating that safe space so that they can be themselves and not just trying to recreate something that appeases their instructor or appeases others, but also shows their beliefs and their outlooks on life, is something that I think is really important to them. So if they believe in their ideas, they might feel like they're the expert in that area. And they can develop confidence through that by talking about their ideas and opinions in a way that make them the expert on a subject matter. So just giving people the opportunity to listen or share their voice and their perspective, because I think it also takes boldness and bravery to share your ideas and your perspectives to not only your peers, but to the world. Like what we do sometimes, like you can create a brand identity or a website, and that gets out in the world, right? So you're not just showing it with your class eventually, but in your career, you're going to be creating things that are possibly going to be seen and judged by others or influence others and affect other people's lives. And you have to be brave and bold to actually share a concept that came out of your mind and your belief system and your perspective and your voice in order to like change something. So I think, you know, giving them that space can eventually nurture confidence in their work and as a byproduct of that sort of nurture themselves, right? Their own personal confidence.
Yeah.
So like, what advice would you give other educators or designers who might have that sort of influence of building confidence in an up and coming designer or design student?
I think things like, you know, focusing more on, because in the classroom, sometimes faculty can get really focused on the delivery of the content. You know, especially in graphic design, something that's so hands-on, this is really happening and has already happened, but, you know, less delivery, more discussion. There's far more learning to happen when the students are engaged and talking and contributing to the conversation. Focusing on, you know, like the improvement mentality. So like, you know, this is good, or this is, you know, okay, and this is where you can take it. So it's like a positive it's a positive way of spinning, like, yes, this needs some work, and, you know, but that's okay. That's how we grow. That's how we improve. You know,
well, it's the compliment sandwich, right?
Yeah.
So you sort of start off with, like, this is what you're doing well. You're on track. This is how you can improve. And this is what you need to do moving forward.
Right? Yeah. That's great. I've actually never used the term compliment sandwich. I like that.
Yeah. It's like you start off with one bun at the top, and then the meat in the middle is where you're actually giving the critique. And then at the end, you follow through with, like, these are the next steps, right? So you always start off with, okay, you're on the right track. This is what you're doing well, right? That's the top bun.
The middle,
the meat, the stuff in the, like, the sandwich is what you need to improve on. And then to end it off is, these are the steps you take in order to improve it and move forward.
Right? Compliment sandwiches. Who doesn't love a sandwich?
I know, right?
kind of looping back to the very beginning of our conversation, I think, and I don't know how to do this like explicitly yet, but I think it's through the way you run your classes and the dialogue that you have, is like telling students, you know, that you have to have internal satisfaction through your work. Like, it's not always about pleasing others. Like, yes, feedback is great, and, you know, everybody's always got a suggestion, but, like, also stick to your guns. And, like, if this is what you believe the project should be or the direction it should go, it's not always about pleasing others too. So I think, like, kind of focusing on like that, you know, fulfilling your values and, like, what you believe as a designer is also important in building your confidence, because that's who you are and you want to go with who you are. So I know that was further at the beginning of the conversation, but I think that, you know, kind of recognizing that as well is kind of an important aspect of the classroom too. I know when I was a young designer and I was in school, I 110% always took the guidance of faculty, even if I felt like that's not my style, that's not the way that's not the kind of direction of the topic I want. And when I graduated and I started working, I regretted that so much. My master's thesis went in a direction that didn't feel quite right for me, but I always took the guidance of my faculty because they knew everything. That's in my mind, that's what I was always taught, is like, they know more than you. They know the right answers. And I mean, do right answers exist in design? Maybe to a degree. That's probably a whole other topic you can argue, so we won't get into that. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, you need to also sort of let the autonomy of the student also develop. You know, these are things that need to be balanced on such, you know, unique levels. So how you do this and, you know, the dialogue you create and the environment you create to do this, it's hard to describe, because I think when you're in it, you know it, but, like, to describe what recipe makes this perfect scenario is kind of impossible. But I think communicating to the students that their vision and their decisions are also important to explore. And, you know, these are ways to guide the students in the right direction, but ultimately they should be following a path that they feel is right for them.
Yeah. And I think, just to sum that up, like you said it, like, I think just giving autonomy over their learning and choosing projects that coincide with their beliefs, their prior knowledge and significance to themselves or their community is key, right? Like, allow them to be authentic without judgment, value their prior knowledge, their culture, or whatever lens they see the world through. Because if you take that autonomy away from them, you strip them of their own identity, their ideas, their confidence, right? So yes, you can listen to instructors' feedback, of course. They've had that lived experience. But also, you should also mix them up to make your own decisions.
Yeah.
To wrap things up, if you could go back, if you were your teacher as you were in design school, what would you say to the past you so that you develop confidence in yourself or in your work?
Oh, okay. That's a good one, because I do regret a lot when I was in school. If I were to go back and tell the old me, I would say that number one, marks don't matter. Well, they do. Pass your courses. But I was always focused on marks. So, and that really blurred what I was trying to achieve in terms of my actual work. Like, I wasn't looking at the final piece. I was looking at, did I get 85 and above? Because I was always striving for 85 and above. And I tell my students this now, but I was totally one of those students. So marks don't matter. Also, just literally what I said, though, because I was one of those students who always took everything that my faculty said as sort of like verbatim. Like, it was, you know, there's all your faculty are there because they are experts in what they do, and they're there to guide you in positive ways. Yes, but if you're taking everything like verbatim, I feel like you're not, you're not combining that with your own autonomy to make decisions and take feedback and like interpret it in your own way. So I would tell my, you know, past self to, you know what? Yes, take feedback. Feedback's important, but also do it or take it in a light that is like reflective of who you are and what you do and what intentions you have for the project, because the project is closest to you. It's not closest to the faculty. So I feel like, you know, what you want to get out of it, whether that being a learning opportunity or the final execution of it. I was always focused on pleasing my teacher, essentially, at the end of the day. So that was not a good thing. And I was also the shy kid. So I was the one who spoke the least during critique because I was, you know, fearful of what people might think of what I say. You know, group critique, presentation scenarios, group projects, I was the quietest one. And I would like to tell myself, you know, engage, say what's on your mind, you know, don't be afraid, because that's where, again, the most opportunity to learn, I think, comes out of those organic conversations and the ability to interact with one another and collaborate and all those great things that we talk about in modern day classroom. You know, why are we there? Well, not to look at a slide deck. We're there to talk to one another and generate ideas and engage in activity and, you know, do all those things that you can't do behind a computer by yourself. So, as a shy kid, I really, looking back, can see, you know, the opportunities that I missed out on because I was just too shy or scared of saying the wrong thing. So those would be probably the three things I would tell myself.
Those are great points and great advice to give. So, Bianca, if listeners want to learn more about you or see some of your work, where can they connect with you online?
I am on Instagram. It's my first and my last name. So Bianca Di Pietro. I'm on Twitter, the same thing, first and last name. My website's my first and last name. Oh, I'm so predictable. BiancaDiPietro.com. If anybody has questions or wants to chat, just, yeah, ding me and on any of those things and I'd get back to you.
Awesome. So thank you, Bianca, for taking the time out of your day to speak with me. I appreciate you giving our listeners advice on how they might develop confidence in their design and in their work.
No problem. Thank you, Mark. It's been so much fun. I loved it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For show notes and links mentioned in this podcast, visit howdwegetherepodcast.com. To receive updates and new episode releases, subscribe to the podcast and follow me on Instagram and Twitter at edtechxd. For all things education and design with wellness in mind. Thanks so much for listening.